I'm fantasy and romance author Leslie Penelope, and this is Imagining Success, an interview series where I talk to authors who have achieved career milestones that others only dream about and ask them how they got there and where they go from here. Today, I talk to Fenderson Jelly Clark, author of the novels A Beanie Song and A Master of Gin, as well as novellas and short stories, too numerous to mention. He's a multiple award winner, having taken home Nebula, Locus, Ignite, and British Fantasy Awards, and having been nominated multiple times for just about every other award the genre has to offer. We get to talk about the industry, shifting ideas of success, and something all Gen Xers should know, why reading is fundamental. He was one of the first people I thought about when I was putting together this interview series, and I'm so happy to share our conversation. Before publishing, why did you start writing in the first place?
Oh, that's a good one. I think I first started writing because I read a lot. And I don't know if this is for everyone, but I know a lot of people who write, they'll say this. They wrote a lot, and then one day they were like, I want to write something too. And so for me, it started like young. I was a kid and I read so much and I was just so interested in it. And, you know, without even knowing things like three-part structures or anything like that, or plot or pacing, I'm just mimicking what I've seen because I've just picked it up. And so I would write, you know, little short stories, you know, just stuff for school, but then for friends, I would make little comic books for my sister and family that I could clip together, these little books. And so I think I was doing that for a long time, even to the point where as I got much older in high school and early college, I find myself still a voracious reader and still doing little stories or things on the side. But I got to say, in all that time, yeah, I never thought of like, oh, this stuff is going to be something I do and people will pay me for it. And more people than my friends or who I'm dating at the time or my family are going to read it. I don't think I actually thought of that until after college, to be honest. So in the beginning, it was just because I liked it because I had an interest in reading so much.
Mm-hmm. So what was the leap between writing and loving writing and then deciding other people really need to read this and pay for it?
Yeah, it was, you know, in the beginning, the leap was just, was at some point, I would say after college, when you've like, okay, I've done the college thing and I hadn't decided to go to grad school yet. I was kind of in limbo. I think I just, it's just like it turned on. I said, hey, what if I took my hand at actually writing a book, like a book that other people want to read? And, you know, part of it was, you know, the issue of diversity. I love these books, but I just didn't see myself. I mean, I love fantasy, for instance. I just didn't see that much of myself in fantasy. I didn't even know of Imaro novels, Charles Saunders. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know of Charles Saunders. His stuff had gone out of print. So he didn't even enter my sphere. I think I knew like maybe a book or two by Octavia Butler, but you as a fantasy writer, you know, this wasn't fantasy, right? Of the secondary world, full-on fantasy. People who grew up, you know, me growing up reading Robert Jordan and Tolkien and all these people. And so I think I at first, you know, then I was, you know, going through my Afrocentric phase. I had to do like a fantasy, you know, I had to bridge it, right? I had to give myself a fantasy novel set in an African type setting, using African languages and culture. And that's what I wanted to do. And I think that drove me a lot in the beginning.
Okay. So then you decided that you were going to public write for other people.
Yeah.
What did success mean to you? Like when you're like, were you querying and what were your goals and your hopes?
Okay, so let's first step and back up. So this is important to say. The spark and the drive was there. The passion was there. The understanding of industry and how it works was absolutely not. It was another country, another planet. What I had that was great was just a drive to write, creativity. Let me tell you how terrible it was. When I would first write my short stories, I didn't understand how long a short story had to be, even though I'd read them. I would finish a short story at 30-something thousand words, right? It's unpublishable. I don't know. I know nothing about the market. I don't know anything about querying, submitting. I don't know anything about getting agents and how any of that worked. In the beginning, it was just me running on this pure passion and drive to do it. but also, I mean, quite blunt, a lot of ignorance, mm-hmm. not knowing yeah. that industry at all. And so it was really a ways into that that I had to kind of learn about the industry. And that took years. That took years for me to realize I needed to learn about it, right? It was a few years of me churning out things and then being, okay, what do I do with it? Now that I have it, I figure somebody's just going to come and get it, right? Success to me looked like somebody would just come get these books. I'd be published. I was thought like, and I'll be, you know, nobody's doing this African fantasy stuff. Well, Charles Saunders did it, didn't know at the time. There were probably 1 million other Black people who were reading this stuff who also had all of the same ideas I did. And it was just, it was almost this hubris that, well, it hasn't happened because I haven't done it yet. Not like, no, my friend, many people have tried this and the industry is hard to break into. There are all kinds of barriers and structural and systemic that deal with a lot of issues why the kind of thing you're trying to do has not been published yet. And so I say all this to say that it took like, there was this long period of just passion and drive. And then there was this hitting this wall and finally getting educated on things. And that was when success to me became more tempered, right? When I understood, okay, success is not getting this massive 3-tome fantasy novel published. It's maybe, can I get some short stories in paying markets? Mm-hmm. I finally figured out that there was a thing called CIFWA and that it was important. I had no idea, right? And like, oh, maybe that success is getting, you know, into that. And then from there, building towards, maybe I can get a book published. I started learning, you know, first book publishers, maybe 120,000 words are what you're looking for. And so it went from, I would say, like, just pie in the sky because I had no idea how the industry works, that I would just show up and people would just, here's my books, take them, to reality of a much more modest step-by-step process.
And so, because you did a lot of short stories and then novellas before you did a novel. Mm-hmm. And so you really took that, I guess, to heart. Was it strategic? Okay.
Yeah. It was a strategy. So my story, just to give make it brief. I had a massive fantasy tome that I thought I would get published. Of course, it was some kind of Egyptotic, you know, Nubian, of course. Yeah. I told you, Afrocentric day.
A total Hotep, right?
Right. Yeah. We were all recovering Hoteps in some way. Say, it's helped inform a lot of stuff, but you know.
I have an aunt tattoo also.
Pardon?
I said, I have an Ankh tattoo also.
So yeah, I have my Akan on one set and Eye of Heru on the other somewhere. So in the beginning, when I was first doing this, that fantasy tome, it went up there. And I kind of fell backwards into luck. I got an agent who had been Bell Hooks' agent. And that wasn't through me querying. It was through really the dumb luck of, oh, I have this book and the right person saw it and they talked to a person who talked to a person. They liked it. But this person had no idea how to sell this thing. Mm-hmm. Right? I had no idea. This was a time when I think the Lord of the Rings movies were out, but there was nobody, like, I don't even think N.K. Jemisin or others had popped on the scene yet, right? To be like, this is kind of, and so literally it went up at this Black imprint of a larger company and they all liked it, but they quote unquote told me, we have to pass. We have no idea how to market Black fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
None.
Yeah.
And that was like my wake up call. Like, oh, there's all these other things. There's politics and all these other things. And that's when I think coming from that was when I decided, okay, I need to be more strategic here. I can't just think I'm going to luck my way into this. People, you know, the industry is difficult and it's complex. And that's when I started really short stories bit by bit, right? After nursing my wounds and sulking a bit and getting over myself, I started that strategy. And yeah, the strategy paid off. It took a long time. The strategy was like, I mean, at least for, I call it the time I got serious. I think by the time I got serious, the strategy took at least 8 years before I think I saw like, okay, my first big story, which was a tour,
right
in 2016. Yeah.
And so you had this really long game, I guess. At the end of it,
I didn't want it to be a game, by the way. I didn't want it to be a long game. I wanted everybody else's great, like, first debut, put it out there, boom, deal. Mm-hmm. I did not want it to be a long game, but it was.
It ended up being a long game. Yeah. So, okay, publishing the short stories, was that just a way to get into longer form? Was that, I mean, was it purely strategic?
Well, no, I don't think it was purely strategic. Partly it was after that whole thing happened with the unnamed fantasy novel, which is now buried deep, deep in the recesses and no one will likely ever see ever again. It was, you know, I walked there. That was like psychically damaging. I didn't know if I was going to write again. Right. I was that dramatic. Right. I was like, oh, I'm done. I'm not going to do this thing. And it was me kind of like, you know, get over yourself. Like, a lot of people have tried this. This is the reality. This is how it's not easy. And so part of the short story writing was pulling myself to get back into it.
Yeah.
Jogging my imagination. You know, it's one of those things where you work on one series and I suddenly found that that was all I had done for a long time period. But what else do I have of interest? Training myself, really honing the craft, right? Understanding that writing is about becoming a better writer. And there are things you pick up from, of course, from all the reading, but you pick up some bad tropes as well and bad habits. And so it was just me honing my craft and trying to find my voice, right? So that I'm not sounding like the other people I'm copying or what have you. And so, no, that short story writing time was, I think, really instrumental in just jogging my imagination, getting the discipline to sit down and just churn out a short story, understanding how to craft a short story, how that's different from thinking of a novella or a novelette. And then just, you know, understanding the craft of writing itself, just writing until I thought it got better and better. Mm-hmm. And understanding the market as well, learning the larger science fiction sphere. I said, as a Black sci-fi writer, I was on these Black sci-fi spaces and they were great and nurturing. And they were wonderful in that sense, but they were completely divorced from the larger science fiction world where all those awards and where that money is and everything else, you know, and that's good and bad. It was good to have those spaces where I didn't have to explain why I used dialect or something of the sort. And we were bouncing off of each other. And I even got to do some indie stuff there. But, you know, then I got published in one of these markets and I was like, you gonna give me a check for this one, right? Or I didn't, and again, this is what SIFWA is. And so it was in part also to learn that other world and to become more experienced in it, right? And yeah, that helped.
So, okay, right now, how would you define success? What does success mean for you at the point in your career where you're at?
You know, that's a good question. Success to me is, I suppose, the ability to write the things I want to write, to take even like of things I think that in the back of my head, I'm like, that's absolutely insane. Like, nobody's going to publish this. Success is the ability to pitch that successfully and get it out there and done. Success for me, oddly, is figuring out my time management of how to do this with family and everything else. And so the very nature of success has changed. I mean, I got the novel published. Yeah, I'd love to like do the big fantasy tome thing one day, but how does that fit into my academic life? How does that fit into my family life? And so, you know, before it was just like, I just want to be published. And now it's like, well, how can I be published? And it's not like eating away at all these other parts of my life that I can integrate it well into my life. So that's like my number one thing about success now is less like the landing a deal, because I landed a deal. I got the publisher. Right. I got the agent. Right? It's much more, how can I make this balance so that it works, so that writing is enjoyable and it doesn't become a chore? Mm-hmm. Right? That I can still find joy when I'm writing. And it's not, I got to get this thing done. And that's the end of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you find yourself setting these like external goals, like monetary goals? I want this kind of deal, or I want this sort of extra rights, you know?
I wish I did. So it's funny. One of the reasons I toyed with being an indie publisher for a while, and you know, I have good friends who have fellow colleagues like Milton Davis, for instance, prolific in his indie. Like some of my first stories. In fact, there's a whole story of how Milton Davis and Charles Saunders published my first short story after the incident and where I wasn't going to write again. That pretty much brought me back to writing. Right. And so I thought about it, but then I saw all the work and I was like, I am terrible at marketing. I am not going to be like the things you're talking about there, the rights. It's just not going to be in my head. It's just, I'm not going to do it. Right. I'm just so everywhere else. And so all this to say, I probably should, but I kind of leave it up to the fact that I trust my agent and the people around me. And so they're the ones who often like, make sure you have your rights. And if you're going to do film, we're like, let's make sure. And they're like, you know, sending out numbers. I mean, the first time, like, I had my agent negotiate my first contract when my agent would tour. And it was really funny because, you know, everybody comes in the low ball. And I was like, well, that sounds good. And he's like, no, it doesn't. And he gets like three times more. And I was like, this is why you have agents, right? You guys know what you're doing. And some people know that. Some people individually, they can know that. That's just not me. I know what my strengths are. That's not it, right? And so I wish I was setting myself on those business side deal, but it's more so I'm going to get the people who I understand know the business and I want them to, you know, handle a lot of that. And I delegate it to them and, you know, I oversee and I watch and I'll ask questions, but yeah, I'm not jumping into that stuff. I'm not Jay-Z trying to get my master's and all.
Be the mogul.
Yeah.
So creatively, do you have the sense that there's stories that you were meant to tell, or that creatively you're always trying to push yourself in certain directions?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's really funny. So my first love, like I've said it here, is fantasy. It is, it's the kind of fantasy you've written. It's secondary world, fully fantasy, right? But the books that I have published, as you know, most people know me, know like this alternate world and these stories are a lot of, and at times meaning and exploring. I was like, well, those are the ones I got published, right? Like, I love that stuff, yes. But, you know, I wrote recently, I said, my comfort food is a good secondary world. I want to be on a completely different place. I don't want it to have any relationship to this world. I just want something completely different. And I, you know, I'm trying to get into that. I did it with middle grade, with a Benny song recently, secondary world. And I'd like to do that, more, as I can, but at the same time, I still have all these, you know, I would say closer to Ring Shout or Black God's Drums type ideas in my head. I have one, like you said, for 10 years, it's been rattling around my head for at least not 10, but about 3 years. And I just haven't had the time to do it, but I want to do it so badly. And it's, you know, it's a story that pulls on our histories and everything else, but it brings in magic, weird horror and everything and all that kind of thing. And so, you know, it's funny you have this. I'm always wondering, like, what if I just run out of ideas? I guess, I don't know. Do you do that? Do you have the same problem? Like, I might just run out of ideas one day.
Notebooks full of ideas that I will never live long enough to write.
That's how it is. I have the fear, but then something new pops up and something new comes in. And it's like, what do I have time? And for me, I know there are always new projects. Whenever I hear of like these much older writing, they've had like, we've had 40 novels. I'm like, 40 novels? Get out of here. Like, how? But, you know, my wife asked me the other day, she's like, do you think you'll write? Do you think there's a time you'll stop writing? And I said, that's a good question. Is there a time I'm going to be like I've written enough. now I'm done. I just don't feel like writing anymore. I said, I don't know. So right now, my main thing is just, if I'm challenging myself, it's to get the things that I have contracted off my plate and then seeing what's next, especially when you write a book and people are like, is there going to be a second one? And I was like, it's supposed to be a standalone. You want a second one? You know the deal. Yes.
That happens to me. I'm like, it's a standalone. Alone.
Right. Standalone story. Now it's a novella, another short story, and now a novel, right? And people want more. And so my biggest challenge, if I would say anything, it's in when people ask that, is to decide, is this really a standalone or is there actually more here? Do I have to actually go back and answer some of those when you do a standalone, you know, you take questions or you take paths. You're like, I ain't never got to answer that. It's just then, like, I go back, I actually have to come up with something, a way to answer that. And so I think that's probably going to be my challenge going forward once I get out of some of these contracts. For instance, doing this middle grade, talk about a challenge. The kids grow quickly. And this has been challenging that you write one book, then the next one has to be written, and the next one, right? Mm-hmm. And so I guess I'm getting challenged in my own way by taking on some of these projects. Right. See what comes next.
So do you think about the market when you are coming up with new projects? It's like, okay, I sold this one. This world did really well. Maybe I stay in that vein instead of going into my epic fantasy that I've always dreamed of.
You know, I won't say that I don't. But the way you put it, first I thought you meant, do I like try to see what the market, what's in right now and so forth. Yeah. That I don't think I do. I know I never do like what's, because I mean, by the time you get a book published, like it's like when Ringshout came out, it came out during that summer after the George Floyd protests. You know, mm-hmm. I get these questions like, so would the George Floyd protests inspire? I said, do you know how books work? Like, that book was written like a year before it. If it came out then, it was written a long time ago. And so I, all this to say that I always tell people, like, of course, pull from the real world, but don't try to fit whatever is the niche, because by the time your book is published, that niche could be out the door. Go for what, if you like that niche and you really want to do it and it brings you joy, then do it. But don't do it just because, you know, the market says. And so, but you weren't asking that anyway. But you were more so asking about my own books. Like, if I see that people really like this, should I do more? Yeah, I think about it, certainly. I think, again, that's why A Digit in Cairo didn't remain just a short story. I had other ideas. A Benny Song, for instance, was before that. But I saw that, okay, people like this. Maybe I should do more. And that really pulled me to do more, I don't know. I always wonder if that's normal for most writers. That nothing feeds our muse than praise. And so the thing that we get praised a lot for, I'm either like, man, do I want to not do anything else in it because I don't want to mess it up? Like, I'll mess up the second season of the show. Or is this a cue for me to do more if people are telling me I like this, right? And so I think it's always a choice. It's always a decision of whether to go on to the new thing or perhaps there's something more here that I can do.
Yeah, I think it's a balance because, especially on the indie author side, there are plenty of authors who can feel almost controlled by their readers if they have incredible success with something, and that's what the readers demand. And then it's like, I have to stay in this lane. Anytime I deviate, the market does not reward that.
Oh yeah, you go read their stuff. Oh well, you know, I liked him when he did this thing.
Yeah.
Well, no, I see he's doing this now. Like, I mean, I don't go read my reviews a lot, but I'll like stumble upon something on Instagram and it'll be like, I like it just when he does all the history. And I was like, yeah, it's not the only thing I'm going to do. I'm going to do other stuff. Yeah.
And I think for me, I just kind of defiantly like do what random different things. So I have the epic fantasy and the historical fantasy, and then I have the future dystopian. And like, I want to keep it different because I will get incredibly bored if I'm doing the same thing. But it's probably not the best business decision. I mean, business is like stay in this lane and you can make money in this lane.
And I mean, I see that point. But, you know, I do wonder, for Benny's song, it's three. So I'm getting the practice of that. It's three novels, right?
Yeah.
Like, what if this was something like, and I've seen people, like, you're right, have amazing success where this is the 12th book, right, in the series. And it's a loyal fan base keeps coming by. And talk about a challenge. I don't know if I could do something like that. I don't know if I could do, like, a Nancy Drew, like, constantly. It's like, I don't know. After a while, it would seem like the characters to me would just start running together. And I would think I would start disliking the characters after a while. Right. I think of Misery, where I just want to kill the characters off after a while. Right. And so that's a good point you make about wanting something different. Cause in some ways I think it goes back to your challenge thing. Those are ways to challenge yourself. I'm going to do this. Like I don't do science fiction. Mm-hmm. Right. I think I've written one science fiction story. So would I go into science fiction or try my hand at it? I don't know, but that's a good point. I think it's that you have to make that choice, right? Between what the market wants, which is what your readers want, which is not a bad thing. If I say to readers, it makes it sound less. If I say the market, it's what readers say they want. And doing that, and you're like, no, I have this new thing to offer. And so for my recent novella, Dead Cattail Assassins, like someone's like, I didn't think he did fantasy. And I was like, oh, that's, little do you know, that's like my number one thing is secondary world fantasy. They thought it was more so alternate history and urban fantasy. Yeah. And, you know, and I was like, no, I wanted a completely Dungeons and Dragons type other world. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we'll see how people take it. Right. Are they like, oh, no, I want him to do, I want more Ring Shout, Black Gods, Drums type stuff. Or are they going to accept this completely different world? Yeah.
And there's an idea that you can cultivate a readership that will, at least a portion of them, that will like whatever you do because they like your voice. They like what you're doing, whatever comes out of your head. Right. Like I've tried, I've done a long time ago, a survey of my readers. It's like, what do you want me to write next? Because that's big in the indie world. And they're like, whatever you want. And I'm like, that's great. I appreciate
that's what you want to hear. Yeah. And I think I have readers who have read Ring Shout, then they'll also read A Benny Song, even though it's a middle grade book, they'll read it a crossover as an adult. And I said, that's great that you just, and I'm that way with certain people, like Neil Gaiman, right? Like I love Neil Gaiman, and Neil Gaiman writing Encyclopedia. If he narrates it, then I will listen to him. If you ever listen to, he narrates a lot of his books. Yes, I will listen to him narrate it because he's the British nanny I never had, right? So I will simply listen to him narrate in Encyclopedia. But yeah, somebody like that.
So are there career milestones? You don't necessarily have to share if you don't want to, but do you have like secret career milestones that you're like, ooh, you're almost afraid to tell yourself? Yeah.
The thing is, so I had it, which was get a novel published. So, because the novella stuff was just kind of accidental. Nobody was publishing novellas, novelettes. You kept those to yourself and that was it. And then Tor comes along. It's like, we're going to do novellas. And like, you know, 2016, 2017 or so. And so, boom, now I'm publishing novellas. And so my first actual novel was A Master of Jinn. And so I was like, okay, I did it, right? All right. So that's the thing I was chasing all this time, right? To get that novel done. And I've done it. It's like, okay. I mean, I would say the awards thing, but the awards thing is still weird and surreal to me. I didn't know what many of those awards were until I got nominated for them. I mean, that's how, and I'm being serious, that's how it was being this Black writer who was just outside those spaces. I was into sci-fi, but I was not into the world. I still have never gone to one of those awards shows. I've always done them virtually, right? Yeah. And they're like, you want to go to Nebula? You're nominated. I was like, it's like, I got kids. You know, my kids got to do something, a game. I can't, you know, it's like, it's still a surreal world to me. So that's never been my measure. I mean, I'm happy, I'm thankful they're back there, but that wasn't my measure of a milestone. My milestone was always getting published. And so the novel kind of did it. So you're right. I've kind of been searching, like, what is the next thing? Is it me saying, I want to finally do my, I used to call it peak white guy fantasy tome, where I can write like a Steven Erikson, Robert Jordan, you know, 12 books, 800 pages each. Is that what I want to do? But when I think about that, as much as I love reading that, I realize like my eyes glaze over. I'm like, I couldn't sustain that. Like, I don't know if I could literally live a life and do that. And so, you know, my milestones have changed. My milestones now are more so get this next thing done so I can get the next thing done. Right. Okay. It's me keeping something on the tape, on the plate, so that when this thing is done, like I told you, the idea in my head, I have like two novella ideas and I want to just get rid of the stuff I have now so I could jump on those and then seeing what happens next, come up with the next idea.
Some of that might be shiny object syndrome. It's like the book you will write is always better than the book you are writing.
It is the meme of the guy walking with the girl, looking at the all the time, all the time. Definitely. Yeah.
And just a plug for your epic fantasy. There was on Twitter, when it was Twitter, a couple of years ago, somebody put out a call for Black adult fantasy of longer than 3 books. Okay. And the only 2 theories that anybody could find was mine, which is 4 books, and Evan Winter's, which will be 4 books, but it's not complete. There's no other adult fantasy long series.
Wow.
That we
it's
can.
It's longer than four. Well, there you
it's
go.
It's longer than three books.
Yeah,
it's longer than a trilogy.
I thought maybe Marlon James might. I don't know how much more he's doing in his.
Are there? I think there's three, right?
I think there's two. Or is he having a third? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
There might be a third. Yeah. You're right. Wow. Look at you. You're in rare company there. But that's true.
I'm just saying that, yeah, the world needs your epic
fantasy.
Especially
like a high fantasy, like a complex fantasy world with different people. I'm trying, most at least go for a trilogy like N.K. Jemisin has, but that's
a good point. David Anthony Durham had a trilogy. So
now you give my goal. Now I got to do my 800 pages.
At least four or maybe five. You should beat us. Do but five.
To reach peak white guy fantasy tome level, that has to be like a dozen.
A baker's dozen.
like Brandon Sanderson level. I don't know. That's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. We should take it. Consider it. I don't know if I can do more than four.
So it's really funny. Back in the day when we were trying to get published, fellow writer of mine, Troy Wiggins, our big thing was like, we need to get published in Beneath Ceaseless Skies. It was like, the fantasy market, because we love their stories. And so for the longest, it was like you had these goals for the longest time. Okay, I need to break into a pro market. And that was the pro market. We were both like, if we can do this, we know we've kind of made it, right? This is a goal we set for ourselves. And we kept pushing and pushing, and we both finally got published there. And then it was done. You're like, yeah. Okay, well, now what? And I think that's the kind of the situation you get in. You're like, okay, I got that thing. I did it. Now what? What's the next thing? Yeah.
What's the next thing? Yeah. And that is really tough. And I guess, I'm searching for someone who has an answer to help me, because I'm there too. It's like you set these goals, and goal creep feels kind of bad. It's like, I want to be able to appreciate this thing that I never thought I'd be able to do. And I do appreciate it, but now I've done it. And so what is next?
That's it.
And I push it further and you want more, but then it feels like, well, I just want more, more, more. And it feels like greed. And what's the balance between setting goals and achieving them and just greed,
I'm trying to, that's a really good question. Like, like the middle grade thing, that was my big challenge. And like, what comes after that? Did go back to some of the worlds I have, create new ones that I have in my head? I don't know. And then there's worry that you take so long to go back to the new worlds. People are like, you wrote that win? You want me to go back and read the second one? You're like the Fugees kind of coming back on a world tour. You had your chance. Too much time has passed, right?
Or like whenever George Martin, if he ever releases the next book, it's like I
keep debating, will I even read it? I was really into his books when I was reading it before the series was out. But now that the series made its own version, I'm like, yeah, you're right. Like, I was like, am I really going to go back and read that? I'm just going to be like, okay.
So much happens.
Yeah, I don't know if George cares though. I think George probably has super success in the sense George is the shiny object. I'm going to write all these other books. Writing that one. I don't know if we will ever really see that book. I wouldn't put too much hope right now on it. You may never.
Yeah, I wonder what the odds are. There's a bet running.
The betting market.
Yeah.
I'm sure there is. Yeah. Hey, and that's my thing. Like, writers is writers, just like musicians. I remember Tully Pulley had an album way out a long time ago, and it was before he spent a lot of time on Twitter and Instagram arguing with people. Arguing with some people who need to be argued with, and maybe some people who don't. One of his albums, he had a bit about how people were saying, hey, I know you did this thing, but what about this song? What about this? And it was just, I guess what he's trying to say was, as an artist, I do have a right to create what I want. And it's, you guys can't dictate to me what I'm going to write. Like you were saying with the indie market, but people would just constantly tell him like, hey, I want to hear a song like this, or why don't you do another song with Most? And he'd be like, yeah, keep it coming, but I'm still going to do what I want to do. And I guess I'm kind of caught in that bit where, as you said, it's like, I'm trying to figure out what I want to do as opposed to maybe what a lot of people want me to do. And perhaps the two come together. Right. Yeah. But maybe even the thing that will not be named a project that never went anywhere. Do I want to look back on that? Do I, it's like some things I retire to the abyss. because I go back mm-hmm. and read them. I go, oh yeah, that was a long time ago. I don't write like this anymore. My thoughts don't work like this anymore. This is terrible. And then there are other things that I do wonder if I take them back out and I put like a new eye to them. Do I still like the story? Can I still shape it in a way that I want it to be? Can I bring my new skills to it? Right. And so mm-hmm. if there's ever, I don't know if it's a goal, but it's always this distant glimmer, right, in the yeah. back. And like when I've probably felt like, okay, I've done enough other stuff, will I turn back to that and, you know, try to turn it into my magnum opus in some ways? I don't know.
Yeah. Sometimes those books are pressure. Like I always say I don't believe I've put anything into the abyss. Like they're in the trunk, but I'm always willing to pull them out of the trunk if inspiration yeah. inspiration comes, because I don't want to abandon any of them. I feel very bad about all the books that I haven't finished. And I do. I periodically take them out. I look at them. I'll work on them for a few weeks and then deadline will come. So then I'll put them back in the trunk. Yeah. But like that kind of, I don't know. I don't want to let go of anything. I mean, I'm a hoarder in training. I'm a book hoarder. I'm an idea hoarder.
I like what you say about you don't like to, you feel like you're abandoning the books, right? Like yeah. they're like, so we weren't good enough for you.
Right? Yeah. yeah. And some of them, I mean, yeah.
What I have done, I don't know if you've done this, I've cannibalized some of those books, unfortunately. Like there are certain ideas or tropes that was like, oh, this is going to go good in here. I was like, I don't know if I could ever publish the book now, because I obviously took like a main idea or beastie or something and I pulled him into this one because I liked it so much. Right. And right. so, yeah, that, yeah. But there are some things I retired completely to do this. So those yeah. are my earlier, more didactic works, which I don't know would fit in this current age. Yeah.
So what keeps you writing now? Like you've got a lot of, you've accomplished those goals, right? So what is the engine that keeps you running, or the fuel that keeps your engine running?
Sure. Legal contracts. Legally binding contracts is, let's be real. When you get the deal, people, like I said, that's what people want, success. Success is you've gotten this deal. And if you've taken it in advance, people have given you some money. Mm-hmm. And now you have to give them something. Right. And I still always wake up in a sweat sometimes. There was a show on HBO. I forgot the name of it. The actress.
I'm sorry. Oh, Michaela Cole, I Will Destroy You.
That, remember she was like, she took the deal, had the money, but didn't have the project, right? And it's still always a nightmare of mine. Like it's like the nightmare you have of waking up in your dream that you still didn't complete college or high school or something because of that one class. Mm-hmm. And you're gonna have that for the rest of your life. I sometimes have the dream that I take this money and I owe them. They're like, where's the book? And I got nothing. Right. And so, you know, I always tell people, like, part of success is to know that you will sign contracts and you are legally bound to churn out some books and you have to give them. And so that is a real driver in some ways. Right. In another way, there's still stories and things I want to tell. There are still bits of culture. I'm still that old, like the Afrocentric guy who was like, I want to show you this bit of culture that you might be unfamiliar with, or this history that you might be unfamiliar with, but I want to couch it in this different way. There's still a lot of that drive. And at the end of the day, the art of I think what I always say is any writer is the love of storytelling, right? Like I said, I am the writer. If I could, I would sit over each person's shoulder as they're reading my books and say, like, what do you think of this part? Do you like that part? What about that? Did you read that? Like my wife purposely, when she reads, she hides. Like, I don't want you asking me, like, did you get the page and so forth. So I think as long as I can still maintain that like mm-hmm. interest in telling a story and thinking in my head, oh, I bet people must have really liked it when they read this part. Oh, I hope they got this. I think as long as I can maintain that has to be my biggest drive still, right? That these stories that I'm telling resonate with folks and that they enjoy them, whether it is just for fun or whether they come out of it like they've learned something or it's something profound because they see themselves. So for instance, I was in France and it just so happens in the Dead Gin world, I basically have where Armenia is an independent nation and the genocide didn't happen. And I met this young Armenian woman. She was like, she thought I was brought to tears. She said, because I just never thought I'd ever see anything. I never thought of it myself. And I never thought I would see something like this in a book, right? Where imagining it just never happening. And so that kind of stuff, like the fact that, you know, I didn't even think of it that profoundly as I did it, but that there are ways that your book can impact people, those kind of things will keep me writing. Yeah, definitely.
And then when someone calls you a successful author, how does that make you feel?
Weird, but I mean, it's weird, but I think I accept it because I understand that it took me a while. It took me a while, for instance, to, I remember somebody would say, stop calling yourself an aspiring author or stop calling yourself a writer and just say you're an author.
Yeah.
And that was like really, I was like, oh, wow. I didn't, because I would say like, I'm an aspiring writer or something like that. So I was using both wrong. and it's still surreal because I suppose the way it happened just seemed like, it seemed like I was watching it happening while it was happening. But I was like, oh, it's happening to me. And so it is weird still when I hear people say that, because I don't feel like those writers who have like the perfect signature. My signature is still horrible. I don't have a fancy signature. I still kind of don't understand all the market. I can't pay attention to all the drama that happens within. And so
much.
It's so much drama. And I was like, I'm not like, you try to tell me what race fail is to this day. My eyes will glaze over. It's like, no, don't even try. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just weird, but I said, I understand, because if I was looking at myself from the outside in, I would say, okay, you got published, right? Your books got recognized. You won some awards, right? Like Leslie Penelope wants to interview you. You must be a successful author. And so I'm like, it's still strange. But I accept it in the awkward way that you accept something like that.
Right.
Where like when people call me to do workshops, I'm like, you want me to do a workshop on what? On how to write? How to write? I don't know how I write. Just write. Right. And so, you know, it's still strange, especially when I see there are people, I guess I consider like Daniel Jose Older or Max Gladstone or N.K. Jemisin, like they can give a master class, right? You can sit down and they'll give boom, boom, this is how I do it. And I'm like, yeah, those people to me are like successful authors who understand the craft. And it feels to me like I'm still trying to figure that stuff out. But, you know, I guess success is relative in its own way.
Even yeah,
and it's certain concrete meanings.
I think all compliments can be difficult to take in that way. Do you think that you have imposter syndrome?
Oh, yeah, of course. I think, yeah, that's I always, you know, the old saying, you know, that you see the old saying, the Twitter saying, or did you have social media? God grant me the, what is it? I forget. The
confidence, Jesus, whatever. The mediocre white man.
Like I said, I'm still kind of there. Yeah, I still wonder, like, is this story actually that good? I think I have it both in my academic and my, I have it on my, both my writing on my side. That's like, I don't know. I guess it's, on the one hand, I can be confident in certain things I do, but I guess it's always healthy to have some sense of not being overconfident, that what you're doing is always going to be well received, or people are always going to be on the same page. Some people are not going to like your stuff.
Right.
Now, please don't tag me in your reviews when you don't like it. I don't understand why you do that. It's ridiculous.
Please don't.
But yeah, I think that imposter syndrome. How about you? Do you have any, or are you like, I'm over that. I know where I am.
I mean, sometimes I feel like I have split personalities. Mm-hmm. It's that thing of being a writer where, yes, everyone needs to buy this and it's wonderful and it's great and I'm proud of it. And also, don't tell me you're reading my book because I have no idea if it's good or not.
Right.
And I'm constantly afraid. It's like you have this this duality of a double consciousness that's always happening. So yeah, I know I'm a good writer. Like, I'm confident about that. But also, every time I sit down to write, I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah.
How did I do this all of these other times. I can look, people are like, how many books do you have? I'm like, I don't know, like 15 or something. And they're like, how do you write that much? I'm like, I don't know. Like, how do you write another novel? Like, I don't know.
Just do.
I literally started the podcast so I could like record myself going through the process because I forget each and every time.
Right.
You know? Mm. And I listen back and I'm like, oh, okay. So this thing that's happening, I went through this in every single book and I conveniently forgot it. The middle falls apart. I have no idea what's happening, even though I've plotted the end. Like, yeah. So I have imposter syndrome, but also I'm insanely confident that I'm writing really good books.
That's good. You have to have that confidence. I think you do have to have the confidence in your own work. That your work is good in the end. And you can't like let one reviewer or one person like derail you in that sense. But I think it's also, I think every writer has to have a bit of, I hope it's good, as a bit of nerves on how it's going to be received generally. You know, but you talk about imposter, I guess my imposter syndrome is more so like you're talking about how you get it done. Definitely around that. Because people ask me how, I still have a sloppy, I write down notes where I can, I have them on my phone. And then I like, I was on a short book, a speaking thing with Danielle Clayton, you know, like super writer. And Danielle showed me how she organizes. It's like you ever go see this person and like you think you're organized and you go in and they are, I'm talking, pulled out the full storyboards with umpteen like colorful, I don't know how many colorful tabs. And she's like, how you do it? I use my notes feature. I was like, what? I mean, it has it so, like you're talking about, especially doing a series, has it so well where I'm like, Am I dialing it in? This is the complexity that I want to figure out how to do. So you're talking about a challenge. I would love to know how to do that level of complexity where, you know, I'm so immersed in that I can spread it all out there on a wall and people can you know, come in a room. It looks like I'm doing a conspiracy thing, but it all fits together. I don't have that. And that when I start feeling imposter syndrome, when I see like people who, I guess I consider they're very successful, not just successful, but they're talented. They understand the industry, understand the craft so well. When I see them doing all of that, I always say like, I got to bring my A game because I mean, the way like they are weaving stories, the way they're doing this is so complex. And me, I'm kind of like, I'm just figuring it in my head. And I got little notes every now and then that I write, right? That's good. That's like, why I think the imposter syndrome type stuff steps in.
Yeah.
And I feel like, yo, I'm not like my sausage, everybody, how sausage is made is always, you know, it's always not glamorous, but I was like, mine isn't even complex. I need to leave behind something that people can, you know, come back and look at my notes and be like, whoa, notes. Look at that.
Right.
Really put a lot of thought into this, didn't you?
I feel like that when I read Lainey Taylor's books. It's like she's an author who I read her and I'm like, I don't know why I'm writing because I will never be this good.
Yeah.
Like, there's certain authors who you're just like, my brain doesn't work that way. I can't.
Oh, definitely. Who is it? Elia Dawn Johnson, like her books.
Oh, gosh.
I love books. Like when I read them, I was like, what in the literary? I can't. Like I said, your book is like, it's like prose poetry of the highest, like
a dance,
like, yeah. Like how these, like I always, it's funny you say that. I tell my wife, I said, she said, what kind of books do you know? I said, the books I enjoy a lot of different books. I enjoy books that are fun. I said, but the books that I enjoy the most are the ones I know I could not write.
Yes.
The writer Seth Dickinson, for instance, he has these, the Coromant, I think it's the Trader Baruch Coromant. Those books, such complexity. I was like my mind could not, I can't see myself sitting down and plotting out stories with this multiple perspectives, this complex. I just can't. I know what I can do and it just doesn't feel like I can do this. And you know, same thing, like I can't see myself writing like the fifth season in case I'm like, no,
just so imaginative.
Like how is that done, right? And so yeah, those are always my favorite type of books. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yes, they also give you that imposter syndrome. So I guess it's like a weird way. I like that it gives me the imposter syndrome, but I also enjoy them. Yeah.
It can push you because I feel like I read Six of Crows by Leigh Bardugo and I was like, I want to write a heist. And then I wrote a heist. And I'm like, I don't know. My heist is not as good as hers, but I wrote a heist and I did it. I put the challenge to myself.
Which is, I think, it's just so important, I think, for anybody who is an aspiring or even an author writer is that you have to read. And I sometimes, there's a time when I go back to my comfort food. For instance, Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan. Mm-hmm. I have reread Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan maybe a dozen times.
Are you serious?
Yes. Them books.
Wow. No wonder, because you were like feeding by when the first season,
yeah,
and you're just a wealth of information. Like, I read them, but like, I don't remember anything.
I've read them so often. It's like, I feel like I grew up with Rand, Egwene, and Perrin, yeah, and Matt. It's like, oh, no, I grew up with them in the Two Rivers. Yeah, I mean, they hung out in Two Rivers together. And so, but that's my comfort food in a sense. So whenever, like, I don't feel like this is the politics or something of the sort, or I just need to chill out, I'll read them or I'll listen to them, like the old audiobook ones, and yeah, I'll fall back in that world. And it's great, but I have to remind myself, don't do that because I'm not reading new work. I'm not reading what's out there. And there's so much out there. I'm not keeping up. It's just like in the academic world, you have to keep up with the literature, right? Mm-hmm. You have to, like, I always tell people, like, yeah, that's, as an academic historian, you don't take a book from like 1920 something and be like, oh, look, which is, you know, what the old Afrocentrics would do. They'd have a book from 1920 that was all their sources. I'd be like, what have people written about it since then? What's the literature? Right. And so much is the same with writing. I think you have to keep up with the literature. Like, what are people writing? What's the new stuff? Like you said, like, what's out there? Just to be frank, what's your competition? And not in competition in a negative way, but a competition in the sense that other people are reading books, right? They have the choice to make of like, I'm going to read your book or I'm going to read this other book. And, you know, what are you putting out there? And so, you know, I had to remind myself, and I tell this to people all the time, you've got to keep reading. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to keep reading so that you know what's out there, so that you can, so it jogs your own imagination. There's nothing, like you just said, there's nothing like reading, whether it's short stories, novellas, there's nothing like, or listening to audiobooks, there's nothing like that stuff to jog my imagination. I will come back after reading or going to a con and listening, I'll come back with all kinds of ideas, right? It doesn't, and people say, well, doesn't mean you're stealing, no, you're not stealing anybody else's ideas. I said, that's always told me, that's like the, I've been quite blunt, that's a sign of the amateur writer, that you're going to, trust me, we're all pulling from each other in some shape, form, or fashion. I'll let somebody know, I'll put in and I'll say like, I was influenced by when you did this, right? Ed Cattails, Kai Ashanti Wilson's books, right? Like, definitely it was an inspiration for what certain things I did in Dead Cattails. And I said, you know, but it was reading that stuff that jogged the imagination, where your imagination starts over and you said, I was inspired by this and this is how I'm going to do this in this completely different way. And so that's why reading is fundamental. Old riff, we're all people of a certain age, you know what riff was. But reading is absolutely necessary if you're going to write. I just, you know, people are like, well, I don't want to read because I might end up stealing their idea. Come on, man, just read.
Yeah.
Just so you understand, it helps you understand pacing so well. It helps you understand the structure of it. Helps you understand what sounds, what not to do. Mm-hmm. So read. It's very helpful.
Yeah, and I find I can't write if I'm not reading. If I go too long without reading, my well dries up. So
yeah,
yeah.
Well, I start for me. I'll start sounding like Robert Jordan if I then I'll
default.
Start, you know. 22 pages telling you how someone's dressed, and Aes Sedai is the kind of dress they have on, and you don't want that. I know. Love his books, but you don't want that.
Right.
That was good for its time, but yeah.
Yeah. We've moved on.
We've moved on. Yeah.
Cool. Thank you so much. This has been awesome.
Good talk for Saturday afternoon. It's chill.
And, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
One of my biggest takeaways from talking with Venderson was that notion of meeting your obligations, whether they be contractual, your day job, your family, your own creative desires, is always a balancing act. What if success was as simple as finding balance? Or as one listener wrote me a while back, instead of balance, maybe we call it harmony. Awards, reviews, certain milestones can be fleeting. Once you get them, what else can you do but strive for more? But working for harmony between your career and your life, between the stories you want to tell and those that will sell, between your art and your business, maybe that gets us closer to an idea of success that is sustainable and actually nurturing. If you're interested in learning more about P.H. Allie Clark or reading his work, I have links in the show notes. You can sign up for the Footnotes newsletter, which includes the show notes for each episode, as well as weekly inspiration, strategies, and ideas to help you grow as a writer and a creative. That is at myimaginaryfriends.net/footnotes. When you sign up, you can choose to become an imaginary best friend for a few dollars per month and get access to premium posts, quarterly workshops, as well as discounts on my courses and coaching. Next up in the interview series, I speak with Kelly Armstrong, an author who's been publishing for decades. She's lived the ultimate dream of so many authors and has come out on the other side with some amazing Zen-like perspectives. If you don't want to miss that, make sure that you are subscribed. And until the next time, keep imagining.